Coming up on Tech News Today, the NSA is told to back off with some of the surveillance. Also, Yahoo making or not making their own version of Siri. We'll clear that up a little bit. And Bill Gates wins Christmas. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, December 19th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT12. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Ayaz Akhtar has the day off in anticipation of the holidays, but we are still here to give you the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Hey, shoppers, get ready for new credit card numbers. Target, the retailer, admits that nearly 40 million credit card and debit card accounts may have been illegally accessed by hackers between November 27th and December 15th. The Wall Street Journal and Brian Krebs report the stolen info came from credit card and debit card data captured in stores during the Black Friday weekend. The U.S. Secret Service is also investigating, along with a third-party security forensics team brought in by Target.
The U.S. National Security Agency just got told to back off. In August, U.S. President Barack Obama commissioned a panel of five intelligence and legal experts to review the NSA's surveillance program. Among its 46 recommendations, the panel suggests that cell phone metadata should remain under the control of a telecom company or independent consortium, and the NSA should get a court order for all queries or data mining. The report states that the recommendations are meant to, quote, safeguard the privacy and dignity of American citizens while also allowing the intelligence community to do what must be done to respond to genuine threats. The recommendations are not binding.
The Washington Post reports that tinfoil hat-wearing crazies like me who put Post-it notes over their cameras may not be quite so crazy after all. Researchers from Johns Hopkins University provide the first public confirmation that it is possible to covertly activate a computer's camera without triggering the light that lets its users know it's recording. In Apple's MacBook Pro, the camera light is hardware locked to the camera. However, researchers were able to reprogram the chip inside the camera to subvert the process. Now, their demonstration only works on Apple laptops up to 2008, but they say, in theory, it could be made to work on later models and models from other manufacturers.
Well, at least we know privacy is really dead.
Yeah.
Everybody could just walk around naked. It's fine. The CES pre-announcements are flooding in, and hey, what a shocker. There's a bunch of big TVs expected. LG and Samsung are both expected to show off 105-inch curved 4K TVs. You heard that right, a.k.a. Ultra HD. Both TV makers call their new display the first and largest curved Ultra HD TV so far. I guess maybe it's a tie. Each of the LCD displays has 11 million pixels compared to 2 million in a current HD TV and 21.9 CinemaScope style aspect ratio. Yes! I don't know if I want it, but I like it.
I do too.
Yeah.
Reddit's Secret Santa program pairs Redditors together to buy cool stuff for each other based on wish lists, posts, and profiles. NY1227, a.k.a. Rachel, was pleased when she got her Secret Santa gift. It was a stuffed animal, a donation to Heifer International, and a book on travel. She became downright giddy when she found out her Secret Santa was Bill Gates. Gates even took a picture of himself with the gifts to prove he wasn't just pretending to be Bill Gates.
That is really Bill Gates. Really a great little holiday gift. Reuters reports that Dish is considering making a bid for T-Mobile USA next year, which would once again put them in a bidding war against Sprint owner SoftBank, which is also rumored to be interested in acquiring T-Mobile. Dish lost out to SoftBank in acquiring Sprint. then made an attempt to buy T-Mobile previously when AT&T tried. Reuters sources say Dish isn't decided yet, but would most likely not sit on the sidelines if Sprint goes ahead and makes a bid.
I think T-Mobile's paying Dish to do this. Like, just drive the bid up, okay? Yeah. Just get in on this.
Come on, I know you can.
We'll
owe you.
Someone in the chat room was asking after we talked about the Target hack who would be next. The Washington Post. The Washington Post admitted today that unknown outsiders gained access to the news company's servers for several days and stole employees' usernames and passwords. The company is still investigating how much data was exposed. They don't think any subscriber information seems to have been accessed. Post officials believe the intrusion may be the work of Chinese hackers because... Chinese hackers.
A video purporting to be a demonstration of a Yahoo app with impressive Siri-like functionality has been making the rounds and spiked in popularity yesterday when published by Android Police. Yahoo told TechCrunch the video was a fake. Turns out it wasn't actually a fake, but it wasn't from Yahoo. According to TechCrunch, the app was made by a natural language and speech recognition navigation startup called Robin Labs. CEO of Robin Labs, Ilya Eckstein, says the company is making a personal assistant and navigation app that brands could offer their content in. Yahoo is one of the potential brands that would use it.
Telegram, a service that wants to be a cloud-based secure messaging system, is putting its funders' money where its encryption is. Telegram backer Pavel Durov will give $200,000 worth of bitcoins to the first person to break Telegram's encrypted protocol. Starting today, Durov will send an encrypted message with a secret email address encoded inside. To win the bitcoins, you'll need to break the encryption, decipher the message, send your findings to the secret email, and you will be rich in bitcoin. Thanks to Habituela Condolci for submitting that to the subreddit, by the way.
I don't blame you for being a little confused. I mean, it is a bit convoluted of a process.
Bitcoin,
what are you going to do? UK ISPs have been rolling out government-mandated porn filters over the last year or so. BBC's Newsnight took the filters for a spin, and they found that TalkTalk's filter only blocked 93% of the porn sites that they tried. I wonder who got that assignment. While it did block several award-winning educational sites and sexual abuse centers site, Sky's filter blocked 99% of porn sites, but also caught porn addiction treatment sites in its net. So again, it's not a perfect science.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by ProXPN. A lot of privacy stories in the news today. Today's no exception. And one of the ways to keep prying eyes out of your connection, well, prying eyes being the eyes that are looking at the screen that is sniffing your packets, it's ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that works with almost any internet connection. It creates a secure encryption tunnel through which all of your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN, your web browser, your email, your file sharing program, your instant messaging program. And ProXPN keeps the things you do hidden from the folks who want to see that traffic on a public Wi-Fi. That's where I use VPNs the most, is when I'm out at a coffee shop or an airport or a hotel and I really need an internet connection. And that internet connection cannot be assumed to be secure. In fact, probably you should assume the opposite. And a VPN is a great tool to have in your arsenal to keep your information private. You get open VPN support, 512-bit encryption tunnel. You can bypass filtering. ProXPN works with your iOS or Android device to allow you to use your data plan or your public corporate Wi-Fi with complete and total privacy. There's a ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. They have great support. Steve Gibson gave it a great review on security. Now, what are you waiting for? Go to ProXPN.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. ProXPN accepts payments through Visa, PayPal, and now Bitcoin as well. Yeah. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. I knew that. That always makes you happy. It always brings a cheer out of Sarah Lane.
Yeah.
Joining us now from across the great wide ocean, Nate Langson, editor from wired.co.uk. How's it going, Nate?
Oh, I am very, very well, thank you. It's sort of become a bit of a tradition that I end up on the last or almost the last show before the end of the year.
It's like TNT, Doctor Who, on Christmas Day. Nate Langson, close to the Christmas break.
I always thought of myself as quite time lordy, I have to say.
Nate, how long have you been sitting in that interrogation room?
About 9 years. But fortunately, the last 3 years, I've been doing TNT from here. So it's and drinking tea. So
it's helped pass the time.
At least there's an end of the year show to look forward to.
Right. Precisely that.
The year will end sometime. Let's start off talking about interrogations. In August, U.S. President Barack Obama asked a commission, a panel of five experts, to review the NSA's surveillance. These experts were Richard Clark. He's a cyber expert, former national security official under Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. Michael Morell, a former deputy director of the CIA. Cass Sunstein, a Harvard Law School professor who ran the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs in the Obama White House previously. Peter Swire, a privacy law specialist at the Georgia Institute of Technology, and Jeffrey Stone, a constitutional law specialist at the University of Chicago Law School. Now, a lot of people looked at that list and said, well, they're going to say, oh, make a few changes here and there, otherwise it looks good, right? This is the president's panel. That's not what they said. They've made 46 recommendations for changes. One of the most significant ones was that cell phone metadata should not remain under the control of the NSA. It either should remain under the controls of the individual telecoms, or the telecom should create an independent consortium. And then the NSA should have to get a court order from the FISA court for every query or data mining request they want to make. The report states, we have identified a series of reforms that are designed to safeguard the privacy and dignity of American citizens and promote public trust, while also allowing the intelligence community to do what must be done to respond to genuine threats. Now, those FISA courts that they want to get approval from, they say those should be adversarial now. They should have a public interest advocate and judges appointed by all the Supreme Court justices. Right now, only Chief Justice Roberts appoints the FISA court judges. They want to extend the protections of the Privacy Act of 1974 to foreigners so that they get a little bit of a notice when their private information is being accessed. They also say the U.S. should stop exploiting flaws in software in order to mount cyber attacks. They say that the decision to spy on foreign leaders should become a policy decision and not be an NSA decision. Nate, from outside the United States, what do you think of the recommendations that are submitted here? Do you think any of them will be implemented?
Well, it's a weird one because on the one hand, the telecommunications stuff involving having the telecommunications companies keep logs and have them requested by the government or whoever needs them is feels to me like a more traditional, quote unquote, traditional approach to that sort of data privacy. I mean, I think that's still how we do the majority of it in the UK, at least. You know, they have to keep logs for a certain amount of time, and if there is cause for concern, they get subpoenaed and it gets taken over. The question marks that I have over this, I mean, a lot of these suggestions are sound. I do always read these and think, you know, these are small steps towards a massive goal. And perhaps realistically, this just needs a major reform. Like, it will benefit more in the long run by not having being chipped away with smaller updates and being worked on from, you know, from the inside out. And the other question mark I have over this is when we start talking about things like the Privacy Act of 1974 and extending that. I mean, 1974 was quite a long time ago. It's 40 years. It was pre-web. And a lot of the stuff that's going on here was physically impossible in 1974. And extending acts that are so old feel kind of counterintuitive and sort of reinforce the notion that we basically need a complete reform on a lot of these things.
You know, I know that the recommendations are just that and not necessarily binding, but you read the main points. Here's what we recommend. And you kind of go, well, how is that not already the way that it works? I mean, I think that this, Nate, you're probably right. The whole, hey, this is something that began in 1974 and let's make a few little changes that would maybe amount to a larger change just based on the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people upset and now the government is kind of like, maybe we should do things a little bit differently. But in general, all of the recommendations seem to me like much better way than how it's working now, not just for regular citizen privacy, but they just make more sense.
I haven't read through all 46 recommendations, but the summaries that I've read seem reasonable. It seems like the commission actually did try to make a good faith attempt to balance the actual needs and the actual job that the NSA is supposed to do in counterterrorism intelligence with the privacy rights of a citizen in a free constitutional democracy. I don't have very much confidence that they are going to survive. They're going to be, first of all, assaulted by the president, who's going to say, well, I'll do this much of this one, this much of that one. The Congress is split on whether they believe that there needs to be any reform at all, because a lot of the senators get a lot of money from people who have a lot of interest in not changing the way these things are done. And if you look at previous presidential commissions, and it's not just under this president, under all presidents, they often make very reasonable and good recommendations that are subsequently ignored, the most recent being the budget one. So I don't have a lot of confidence that this is going to help, but it certainly is better than them coming back with a rubber stamp recommendation saying leave things as they are.
Well, and at least the fact that we all are able to read through all 46 documents if we have the time and inclination is a great step forward, because more public interest, yes, does not always lead to policy changes, but you can certainly lean on the people who make the laws in order to change things that end up benefiting people.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power.
Toward actually having change and real oversight.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Yahoo and their Siri-like app that showed up on video yesterday. Is it real? Is it fake? I'm confused now.
Well, what was funny about it is that, so TechCrunch ran this story and included this video that was sort of making the rounds. It's like, it's something Siri-like inside a Yahoo app. Oh my gosh, Yahoo is doing its own Siri app. And Yahoo said, no, we're not. And so then it was like, some insiders at Yahoo said, oh, this is a fake. This isn't ours. Well, it's not a fake. This is a real product built by Robin Labs. They're a natural language and speech recognition and navigation startup. So they're doing all sorts of stuff. They actually have an app that's out in the wild already. But this is something that was leaked, supposedly, according to the company. And they weren't really ready for prime time yet. But it was something that they were using baked into Yahoo as an example. This was not commissioned by Yahoo. Robin Labs and Yahoo both say, I didn't ask for this. This is something that Robin Labs is building on its own. Although Robin Labs sort of coyly, when asked by TechCrunch, says, Yahoo and we are kind of on the same page. We're sort of pointing to perhaps a nice, cool agreement down the line a little bit. Now, I mentioned Robin Labs already has some products out. It's a known company. They've been building platform for custom voice assistants. This is actually the second stage, what they're working on now, of the startup's development. The first was a personal assistant navigation app. That app launched last year. Stage two is like Siri for everyone and everything, instead of Siri is just for iDevices, something that Apple has built for people who are using Apple products. Nate, is the idea of a Siri-like assistant great for all sorts of different products? I mean, right now, all that I can really think of that's a solid Siri competitor is something like Google Now, which actually works better. But again, that's within Google itself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not really that surprising. I don't think that anyone is looking to do this sort of thing with or without Yahoo support, because on the one hand, Yahoo has a tendency to acquire a lot of these sorts of startups. A lot of the acquisitions that Yahoo has made this year have been in the field of automation or in aggregation or shortening things down. When you look at something like Sumly and how they're sort of rolling that into things. So it doesn't surprise me that these are products that for a company like Yahoo, if this turns out to be real and that actually there are conversations happening and Yahoo is in talks with them, it's something that Yahoo would have to acquire and bake into their product. These sorts of products, their strength comes from learning from behavior monitoring and constant tuning to individual users and voices and speech patterns and things like that. It's not something that I feel a white label product can adequately do well. I mean, we've seen so many funny videos about how Siri can't understand a Scottish accent and things like that. And they take a long time to get really smart and really, really useful. So I think that it's not surprising. I think we're going to see more of these, actually. I think we're going to see a lot of these sorts of startups. Siri, from SRI, was an independent company before it was acquired. And I think we're going to see more of these startup and focusing on specific types of personal assistance, if you like. And I think we're probably only a few months away, maybe a year or so, from seeing a really good one with language and translation. I know Google Now does it, but I think that someone who focuses specifically on that could do it very well. And then it would be no surprise if Yahoo takes an interest and acquires and bakes it into some of their products.
I'm curious about the fact that Robin Labs actually spoke up and acknowledged this at all. They were fairly cagey, saying great minds think alike when asked about whether this was them pitching Yahoo or Yahoo pitching them.
Right.
I hope, well, I don't, hope's too strong a word. I want this to be a partnership, and possibly I think it would be a good thing for Yahoo to acquire Robin Labs. I hope this doesn't torpedo Robin Labs' efforts in that direction. If they were banking on some kind of close partnership with Yahoo or maybe even an acquisition, this is the kind of thing that could spoil a deal like that.
I don't know. Sometimes I think they can help. I mean, we've seen if someone is that focused in focusing on Yahoo technology and things like that, you know, it shows a real understanding of what Yahoo's service is and what this company thinks that Yahoo could be doing better. And that's, we've seen examples of that in the past where some people just do something on their own. A company spots them and think, hey, that's great. I mean, I'm reminded of it was a teenager who created this giant world for Skyrim and ended up getting hired as a games developer, and he created that thing to try and prove he could be a good games developer. So I think we do see those stories quite often, and companies think, actually, that's not bad, or that fits into a current plan. Let's have you, even if it's just an acqui-hire, which is the worst word in the world.
yeah, we need a better word.
I think it's not the worst thing. It's not the worst thing to do.
All right, let's talk a little bit about SantaGate.
Yeah.
That is a hell of a story. I like it. Some people are skeptical. They're like, well, all he did was donate money in her name. She seemed to love it. And her description of it is just charming. You've got to go and look up redditgifts.com/profiles/view/NY1227 and click on that link to read it. I'll read just a bit of her description of her opening it, because she didn't realize at first it was Bill Gates who had sent her the Secret Santa. Stuffed animal card indicating a donation had been made to Heifer International came out. Then the Book of Journeys, a National Geographic book of a 500 lifetime journeys. She said, I cannot wait to read this. Not only that, but I love pictures and reading up on new places. This gift was perfect. I quickly flipped through it, missing the inscription, message, and signature from Bill on the first page, and headed to the final part of my gift. Once again, to me, from Bill, I opened this, and it's a man holding a sign. Oh, wait. Holy bad word. Time out. And then it finally hit me. All the presents I just tore open, the charity, then everything was from Bill Gates. I quickly went back to the book to see a really nice message and a note from Bill wishing me Merry Christmas and a happy birthday. So he'd actually done his research. He'd looked at what she liked. He'd come up with some appropriate gifts. He'd taken a picture of himself holding the card that had the message about the donation, and very Bill Gates-like, very clever, underlined a couple words so that it would be clear that this was the same card that she had in her possession. If this is some kind of fake, which some people still seem to think, it's a very elaborate one. I don't think it is at all. I think this is great.
It's too weird. I mean, even the creative people of the world wouldn't, like, how do you fake that Bill Gates is a Secret Santa? It's just, it's like, it wouldn't come to your mind. I'm positive this is real.
I think it's great. I mean, the skeptic and the sort of, stuffy journalist in me thinks it's a great bit of PR, and but at the end of the day, I think it's a great thing to do, and I'd never heard of Heifer International, and they've probably got a lot of traffic out of this as well. They don't just do cows, apparently. They do sheep and water buffalo, and you can gift an ark full of animals and eggs and things too, and I think it's a sweet holiday story. I've quashed the stuffy skeptical journalist for the time being in a box.
I came to know Heifer International through the author Patrick Rothfuss. He's a big supporter of that, and he always does some great charity stuff with goals of helping out folks with that, because they try anyway to get people on their feet and give them something that's going to help them out more than just, you know, sending money or food, which are important too. So yeah, the skeptic, I'm like you, Nate. The skeptic in me really wants to poke holes in this. But then the sentimental holiday cheer elf inside me just tells it to settle down for a second.
Yeah, I think he might do this stuff quite often. I mean, I remember a few years ago there
seems
was
to fit the profile.
Yeah, I mean, there was a massive anonymous donation given to Wikipedia at one point that no one seemed to know who had donated it one year. It was a lot of money, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think. And no one knew who it was, but the rumor was that it was Bill Gates, and that he just goes around and deposits amounts of money like a Santa, a money Santa, and does good things because he's a nice guy. And I choose to believe that in this instance.
I think we're all agreed. That's good. Hey, and just.
It's easy to be like, well, you know, I mean, so what? It's Bill Gates. It's like, if that was you, that would be, I mean, that doesn't happen every day. If I got presents from Bill Gates and some sort of proof of him that he sent them to me, I'd be talking about it too, are we.
Yep. By the way, just side plug. If you're interested in Heifer International, if you want to be a geek doing good, check out worldbuilders.org. They're about halfway to their fundraising goal for the holiday push. It's a great charity and a great place to take advantage of. And it's the same charity that Bill Gates gave to in Rachel's name. Let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. I launched a new website yesterday, and Squarespace made it easy. And I was able to just add in a collaborator, do some posts, look at the comments, all of that stuff with a beautiful design, a solid platform that's easy to use, inexpensive, starts at just $8 a month, and included a free domain name when I signed up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of my website. My content looks great on every device. Even their code is beautiful. For you coders out there, just take a look. You're going to love it. This ensures your site's content can be crawled by Google, Yahoo, Bing, and all other search engines. That code is search engine optimized. The whole site is. Hosting's included, too. They take care of the hosting and the back end and the reliability and all that stuff. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT12. To get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. On to porn.
Yay.
From holiday cheer to UK's pornography filter, BBC's Newsnight thought they'd take the new ISP filter out for a spin, Nate. Here's what they found.
Yeah, they did.
TalkTalk's filter.
That's what.
Yeah. You didn't help them with that, did you? TalkTalk's filter started in May 2011. Sky's filter started a month ago. BT put theirs in place this week. Virgin has a pilot program. The full launch comes in early 2014. Here's what they found. TalkTalk has blocked bishuk.com, an award-winning British sex education site. TalkTalk also lists the Edinburgh Women's Rape and Sexual Abuse Center as pornographic. They also blocked a program run by sex education experts and taught to 81,000 American children that has been in development for more than 20 years. BBC Newsnight attempted to access 68 known porn sites, and the filter caught all but five of them. Sky's filter did a little better. It blocked 99% of porn sites, but it also blocked some porn addiction and treatment sites. BT blocked sites including Sexual Health Scotland, Doncaster Domestic Abuse Helpline, and Reducing the Risk, a site which tackles domestic abuse. The UK Council for Child Internet Safety has a working group to discuss the overblocking. Well, and they got statements. BBC got statements from BT, Sky, and TalkTalk, and they all pretty much said, look, we know blocking isn't perfect, but we have systems in place for people to report when something is inaccurately blocked, and we work hard to get them fixed. So the question is, okay, they know that filters aren't going to be perfect, but they think you're still going to be able to improve them as they go along. Nate, can filters ever get good enough to make this worth it?
Do you want the long answer or the short answer?
We got time.
The short answer is no. And the long answer is absolutely, definitely not. I mean, it's a fundamental problem with filters is that they are by design too specific, or rather not too specific, too broad. And we see this problem even on Wired sometimes. We know that a lot of schools have filters to stop school children accessing this sort of thing as well. And Wired gets blocked for being anything from sexual content to violent content and things like that. And it's a very, very difficult thing to get correct. That said, I mean, a lot of the actual intentions behind this are valid. And it's, you know, that's great. But, you know, they have to do better. I suppose the one thing that is in this's favor is that this is only affecting new customers. So, for example, I'm on Virgin Media right now. And for research, I hasten to add, I saw if this filter was live, and it doesn't seem to be active on my line. And it's only going to stop people who sign up to begin with, and then you get the option to disable it. So the actual number of people this will affect when this is switched on is probably going to be quite small. And when the people do enable it, then they're going to be given a choice on installation. Do you want to turn this off? And so I think that in a way, this could end up not being quite as severe and also have such a severe effect immediately as people have made out. On the flip side, filters do need to be tuned. And I really, really hope that there are some people at the companies that are operating these filters and these blacklists are being attentive to changing the filter to whitelist sites like these quite quickly, because that's what it needs.
I mean, is the worry that, okay, we've identified maybe, say, five, porn addiction sites or domestic abuse help sites or sort of things where it's like clearly not porn. Okay, well, let's just go ahead and allow them again. I mean, if it's really such a short list, then you figure, yeah, well, sometimes things fall through the cracks. But is the worry that there are just a lot more and that's indicative of a filter that simply doesn't work? I mean, for porn or anything really, because it's probably just going by keywords.
Yeah, and the fact that this is an optional thing, I think makes a difference in answering that question, because you can choose not to participate, right? And you as the ISP customer have been given, I think, a pretty good way of doing this. Most of these that I've read about are forced to opt. So when they launch it, pop-up comes up and says, hey, there's a filter. It's meant to block porn. Do you want it or not? You got to click something to keep going, though. And so that forgives a lot of sins right there. But I still think, and there's two ways to look at this, I still think that a filter that doesn't block all the porn lets some of it through anyway, and that some can be found. And if it's at the cost of blocking very helpful and necessary sites, I think there are better ways to control this sort of information on the customer's end. The other side of that argument is, well, if it blocks a bunch of them, that means there's less of it out there to access, and we can try to fix the false positives, and those will get less and less over time. I tend to disagree with that.
Yeah, there's also the fact that this is affecting major ISPs, and that in the UK, at least, I'm not sure how this is in the States, but we have hundreds and hundreds of smaller, independent, local internet service providers. And we, back in July, actually, I mean, this is a story that's been rumbling on for months and months and months. And back in July, we reported actually on Wired about one particular ISP who'd said that, sorry, for a censored internet, you'll have to pick a different ISP or move to North Korea. And that was a bit of a sort of throwaway comment, I think he thought it was. But he's been quoted on it quite a few times for basically saying, look, you can always change ISPs, and we're not going to follow. We're not going to follow this suit.
Yeah. All right. How about some good Vine news? Finally.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. When I read about the fact that Vine is coming to Android, the gingerbread version, I was like, "What year is it? What's happening?"
But gingerbread.
Yeah. Well, the deal is this is Google's own analytics. Gingerbread, which is Android 2.3, still accounts for 24% of active Android devices. So that's a lot of potential users for Vine. Hey, I mean, Android has so many millions of users, 24%. Let's give them access to a big Twitter product. Of course, Twitter owns Vine, and also a place where advertising potential is certainly there. Even though Gingerbread's about 3 years old, now if you are running Android Gingerbread, you can use Vine. Doesn't allow video uploads because it's limited by the device, but users can watch videos, like videos, comment on them, re-vine videos from the app. So it's like you're almost participating 100%, even if it's not quite. But that's not all. Twitter is also introducing vanity URLs for Vine users. So the way that it works is it would be vine.co, that's their That's their domain / Sarah Lane. And what's nice about it is that I don't have to worry that somebody else is going to take it because it's tied to my Twitter username. So if I wanted something else, I could reserve it. But as a verified user, it's pretty much going to say, you need to claim your username, but we're going to go ahead and hold that for you. So you don't have to worry about people squatting on that. Speaking of verified users, starting tomorrow, you can reserve your name. Works like a Google Plus vanity URL or a Facebook vanity URL. And then everybody else on the 23rd, I don't really know what it has to do with profiles that have been verified. It's probably more of just like a rollout that makes sense. But clearly, Twitter wants people to start thinking about Vine again. Hey, Android users, get on board. Start using Vine. Hey, hey, people who like vanity URLs, make it easier to share your Vines. What's interesting about this, too, is right now, Tom, if you share a Vine on Twitter and I go ahead and look at that video, I'm basically looking at a Vine permalink of that video. I can't click on your name to see the other Vines that you've made that are associated with your profile, kind of like what you can do on Instagram now. But Twitter is going to offer that as well. I think that's going to be a huge game changer as far as Vine, not just adoption, but current use. I find the whole experience very annoying. If I see something I like from someone at the Vine video page, I want to be able to interact with that user, and I can't see what their collection is or what their profile looks like. So I think that that's going to help the experience a lot. I don't know if it's going to make me want to Vine more, but you know, it helps you with interaction. What do you think, Nate? Does Vine have a solid 2014 in the works?
I hope so. The thing is, I don't really... Vine's such a weird one. Like, in a way, I really like it. I love the concept, but I don't use it. I never seem to use it. I don't like the app. I don't like how you... There's no sort of really good APIs that make it possible for other app developers to make really compelling apps to display Vines in creative ways, at least not that I've seen. And the only time I seem to really use Vine is when I go on YouTube and search for Vine compilations, because I think they're some of the funniest videos on YouTube. Just 10 minutes of 6-second, highly refined, surreal bits of comedy. That's the best thing I've seen Vine do, and Vine doesn't actually benefit from that other than maybe a bit of awareness. So I don't know whether they're going to have a great 2014 or a really weird one, but I think they need to do more with the app, and maybe that this is a step in that direction. What do you think? Do you use Vine?
I mean, I've got a handful of Vine videos, but no. Usually I kind of forget it exists until I see somebody share a Vine on Twitter. Tom, I know you don't Vine ever.
No, well, I Vined on Monday. Like, I finally ran into a situation, and it was funny because I was thinking, how should I do this? I want to make this quick little video, and it's just going to be 2 or 3 cuts, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. And it was, you know, chattering in the back of my mind, oh, right, Vine. I almost forgot about it. And that worked out pretty well. But yeah, it doesn't come up much. It's not something that I think about. And I'm surprised I didn't even forget about it then. I think this is pretty clever of Twitter to say, hey, usernames. Everybody wants to claim a username, right? Those are valuable. Better get in there on Vine and get your username. That will bring a lot of people back into Vine, remind them that it exists, get them to use it maybe a little more. But I don't know if that solves all of the issues that Nate was talking about and the stickability, whether it'll keep people around.
I think what would be really useful is if Apple baked in Vine into iOS, because Apple has a good relationship with Twitter. Twitter's been baked in to iOS for a while now. They are quite proactive at adding support for third-party services in iOS updates. We saw Vimeo and a few others added in the last revision. And I think that if you had an option maybe to share to Vine from iOS, and maybe there was some sort of native way of creating Vines on some devices, then maybe that could give the service a jolt. I'm just not sure whether confining this to an app is the right approach for mass appeal.
You know what they probably should do is get celebrities to use Vine more often, because it seems to be that Twitter is more of a broadcast platform. At least that's according to a study from John Brunner at O'Reilly, right, Sarah?
Yeah, this is fascinating stuff. If you like the idea of kind of scraping accounts and figuring out where the patterns are, which is what John Brunner did with a random sampling of about 400,000 Twitter accounts. He has a whole explanation of how exactly he went through it. He wrote a Python script and was looking at a bunch of different parameters. But in general, it's kind of the overarching way that, Twitter is set up that I thought was so fascinating. Obviously, in our line of work and people who watch and listen to TNT, I mean, many of us are very active Twitter users. We get it as a news source. It's a way to chat with other people and find like-minded folks. For a lot of people, the follower count that you have is very, very important. He says, the median Twitter account, let's put it into a little perspective here, has one single follower, just one. Among the smaller subset of accounts that have posted in the last 30 days, he calls those are what he calls active users. The median account has just 61 followers. You know, it's funny because he makes a mention that somebody who uses Twitter in the last 30 days seems like an active user. Twitter calls an active user someone who has logged into Twitter ever. So
that, that makes you active? That you signed up?
Yep. That's what Twitter calls an active user. Yep. So take sometimes Twitter's active user numbers with a grain of salt. I say 30 days is about right. He says, yeah, those median accounts just have 61 followers. If you've got 1,000 followers, which to some people that seems like a lot, but of all the celebrities, and people who spend a lot of time on Twitter who have more than 1,000, that doesn't seem like too much. You're still, with 1,000 followers, in the 96th percentile of active Twitter users. If you have over 20,000 followers, you're in the top 99.9% percentile. Woo. Yeah, woo-woo. All right. So active Twitter accounts follow about 117 users on average. That's the median. The majority of them, 76%, follow more people than follow them. I know sometimes you kind of look at a Twitter account and you go, well, what's up with this person? They're following more people than are following them. I wonder if there's a legitimacy problem. Well, no, that's the majority. And then just over one in every 1,000 Twitter accounts has a name that refers to Justin Bieber in some way. One in every 1,000 Twitter accounts has a username that somehow has the name Justin Bieber in it. An additional one in every 1,000 refers to Justin Bieber in their account description, in their Twitter bio. I'm not kidding. This is real data scraped from 400,000 Twitter accounts. So a lot of this is kind of like, geez, Twitter just seems way less important. It's a consumption device. There are a majority of people on Twitter that nobody follows or that follow a lot more people than are following them. And clearly a bunch of bull crap in there, too. If an account has Justin Bieber in the name, well, it might just be an enthusiast, but it's probably some sort of a bot that's trying to sell you something. So Twitter is ramping up for a huge, huge year of growth in 2014. They're public now. They've got the shareholders to respond to. Nate, when you see some of this stuff, you know, it's kind of fun to, you know, kind of chuckle at. But does this spell problems for Twitter going forward when so much of this is kind of like, looks like hype?
Well, the Bieber thing is probably not a massive surprise. I mean, I think about in 2010, it came out that about 3 or 4% of all of Twitter's servers were dedicated to tweets about or to Justin Bieber. So they've probably been prepared for that sort of redundancy for a while. I mean, when I look at these sort of figures, the first thing I normally think of is what does this mean for me, and or what does this mean for other people? Like, what can I take away from this and say to other people, this is how things work and this is how you can be better on Twitter as a result? There is nothing I can take away from this to me that suggests anything more than, oh, isn't it quite nice? I'm in the top 99% of Twitter users. How quaint. But I think it does spell something that Twitter could be doing better, which is maybe reminding people to tweet. If there are accounts that maybe were active for a little while and then dropped off, and we see a lot of that with new services, is that people hear about a new service, they join it, they think, oh, that's fun, and then they go away because their friends aren't there or what have you. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of a reminder to say, hey, by the way, come back, look at all this cool stuff that's happening. And so maybe Twitter could actually embark on some sort of, you know, direct messaging campaign or something to remind people about all the great Justin Bieber tweets that they could be absorbing every minute of every hour of every day. And wouldn't you like to get in on that?
I suspect a lot of Bieber bots are at the bottom of some of these numbers. Let's fire up the randomizer, shall we, Jason? Randomizer. It's not quite a mandate, but 49% of the live audience voted for a life-size Lego car that runs on air, as reported by The Telegraph. They're not sure if it's really a Lego car that runs on air or not. It's verging on unbelievable. But a Melbourne entrepreneur, Steve Sammartino, and a self-taught technology guy, Raul Ojeda, say that it's an engine that runs on air and it moves a life-size car that two people can ride in down the street. And it's kind of amazing looking. I want it to be true. And it, you know, if my eyes can be believed, it does run. Do you believe it?
You believe it?
I believe nothing anymore.
I believe it. Oh, my God.
Are you a
surely
believer?
They have to glue these pieces together. Like, I've seen cars. They take a bit of sturdiness to be actually useful.
They might have
plus
done.
Plus, those
they
wheels might have done. Are clearly rubber.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the tires are not made of Lego tires. The tires are real tires. Looks like those pistons might not be Lego. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I love it. I've been playing the Lego Marvel Superheroes game on PS4, so right now I see everything as Legos. And so I choose to believe this is real. And I choose to believe
this doesn't even strike you as odd. You're just like, this is what the world looks like to you right now.
Tom, I grew up in a place called Buxton. Nothing strikes me as odd after some of the stuff I've seen growing up in that quiet Fair little point. Country town.
I don't Absolutely. Really care if this is real or not. It's a cool video. You saw a Lego piston car driving down the street with a drone following it.
Yeah, it was a quadcopter.
It was just the cool video. Yeah, it was like, that's just cool. I don't, you know. Maybe it's not street legal, but more. Out on the farm, at least. You know, you could have like a Lego tractor where you're not really worried about collisions and things like that. I could see some real world use cases for this.
Well, some real world use cases are coming in the future on the calendar.
BlackBerry earnings tomorrow. Dun, dun, dun. Sorry, BlackBerry. That was not nice. Tomorrow, December 20th. It's just what I do now when we go into earnings reports. And looking ahead to January, Sony PlayStation 4 is coming to stores in India on January 6th for about 39,990 rupees, which converts to about 641 U.S. dollars.
A little pricey.
But, a bit pricey, but iPhones are pricey there as well.
We got emails.
Incoming message.
Got an email from JD who says he's from Pennsylvania, Altoona, Pennsylvania. The original discussion on rumors of Google baking their own chips caught my attention. I didn't have any ideas at the time other than what you suggested until now as I watched Monday's podcast. Sarah mentioned something about assembly lines in the discussion regarding Google's purchase of Boston Dynamics. He says, what if these are both connected? The obvious connection would be the ability to design new robots and chips to run them for a truly Google experience chip foundry. But a more exciting possibility could be rapid prototyping, combining chip foundry tech, robotics, and 3D printing. Every time I try to figure out the goal, I come with a different conclusion about what's possible. A case of IDIC in real life, perhaps.
I think that's intriguing. I'm not certain that that would really be what's up, given the nature of the reports.
Well,
but it's not impossible.
I don't think anything is impossible when you're talking about robots and Google.
In robots, all things are possible. So true. Benjamin from Oaktown, California, Oakland,
Woo!
The nickel dime, the 510, says, hey, Sarah, Iaz, Tom, and Jason, about LG's Chrome OS desktop, initially I was thinking what Iaz was thinking. At the right price, this could be a great monitor that happens to run Chrome OS as a bonus feature. Then I realized this is exactly what I wanted in college. This is your dorm desktop. Since most college-age people these days watch video online, this is their TV. It shows Netflix, Hulu, and YouTube, and you can plug your Xbox or PlayStation into it via the HDMI input to play games as well. It can also be a desktop if you really need it in a pinch, too. It doesn't really run games, though. This is not a powerful CPU or video card in there. What do you guys think?
Well, yes. some simple games, I guess.
But yeah, you plug your Xbox in it if you're rich enough to have this desktop and an Xbox, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, no one's buying the Ouya because it's the world's most powerful console, are they? They're buying it because it's fun. The games are simple.
Are people buying it?
Yeah, that was my question. Are people buying it?
I'll tell you something. They are selling it in the biggest game retailer in the UK, I noticed the other day, in my town. It's called Game, and it was PS4 and all that stuff. They've got an entire shelf dedicated to Ouya. It blew my mind at how amazing that actually could be.
Hmm. Good points. Good points all. And thanks to everybody for their emails. And thank you, Nate Langston, for joining us. Wired.co.uk to follow the great enterprise that Nate heads up over there. What are you guys working on these days?
I'm working on nothing because I'm on holiday right now. So I'll be doing very, very little for the next couple of weeks. but generally, we do a lot of stuff. We've had a really good year. But as ever, it is our podcast that I would love to point you guys to. We just published a special about major trends that we're forecasting for 2014, things like customizable medicine and how drones are going to get friendlier, and 4D printing and things like that. And we've got a bunch of specials coming out over the next couple of weeks that I would dearly love everyone listening to have a listen to and check out. And it's on iTunes and all the usual podcatchers and what have you. That's the wired.co.uk podcast. Plus, I'll be at CES in January. So if anyone sees someone looking exactly like this, walking around, then do come and say hi.
And
or tackle them because they're your doppelganger.
Right.
And bring them to you.
Yeah, that's usually what happens with my brother, Andy, who looks a lot like me and is also a tech journalist for CNET. So
Andy, we often get confused at events.
Sorry?
Do We Need This coming back?
Do We Need This, our other podcast? Yes, we're starting that up again in January. Okay. We had a lot of people sort of asking, why have you stopped doing it? And it's purely been a time thing, and we did a few pilot episodes. But yes, we're going to bring that back in January. My Andy and I's comedy podcast about the world's most pointless things.
Good stuff.
That will be making a return, yes.
Bring it back.
Little programming note for folks. Don't forget, tomorrow will be our last regular Tech News Today before the holiday break. You will still get Tech News Today episodes in your feed. We've got our predictions results show, our predictions show, our open mic show to tide you over through the holiday break. We'll be back on December 30th with a year in review show, and that'll be my last episode as host of the show, so don't miss that. You can find us on the web in so many places. We'll need your subreddit submissions for one more day. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Get in there. You can also email us, TNT@twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. And, of course, visit our website, twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back tomorrow with Darren Kitchen, Tim Stevens from CNET. I got to get used to saying that. And Len Peralta will be illustrating the stories. We'll see you then.